When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
On this episode of Newt's World, I am your host, Infant Newt Gingrich, in a sense, Sean Hannity, and I'm going to be turning the tables on my good friend, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. And today I will be asking the questions of Newt about his brand new critical book. It's called March to the Majority, The Real Story of the Republican Revolution. Now out in bookstores all across the country today. All right, Mr. Speaker, Newt Gingrich is with us. It's great to be here with you, sir. This might be the defining conservative book in the modern era. I've never been so concerned, worried, afraid, if you will, even, for the future of our country. I think we're in the wrong direction on every major issue. I think America's adversaries are on the march. I think our economy is a disaster. It doesn't need to be. And by every measure, we're not fulfilling the promise of the American dream. And that, of course, facilitated by freedom and by limited government and the principles that you and I hold near and dear in a constitutional republic. So you wrote this book, and it's called March to the Majority. You are a number one New York Times bestselling author, and I was with you. I had the honor to be with you, to be your MC the night you became speaker. And this was in 1994, and the party was at the Cobb Galleria, and it's a night that I'll never forget. Republicans had been out of power in the House of Representatives for 40 years, and you came up with a series of teaching tools for Republicans to message and principles to stand on. And it was called Renewing American Civilization. And that evolved into the Contract with America. So why is this important? It's important for a lot of reasons. March to the Majority, the real story of the Republican Revolution, is now out in bookstores everywhere around the country, Hannity.com, Amazon.com. And, you know, I got to tell you something. I want to ask how you did it and how we can apply it to today. And I really want to turn it over to you.
Let me first of all thank you for doing this, because I know how really amazingly busy you are with a radio show, with TV show. March to the Majority, I think, is totally relevant to today. I think all the principles that enabled us, which we developed, Joe Gaylord and I, as you know Joe well, my partner in that whole project, we spent 16 years growing a majority. And then we spent 4 years maneuvering Clinton into signing the only 4 balanced budgets in your lifetime, welfare reform, the largest capital gains tax cut, got him to come to the State of the Union and announce proudly that the era of big government is over, which I have to confess, I felt compelled to stand and applaud at that point, sitting right behind him. Because, you know, when you get a liberal Democrat to say the era of big government is over, you know something big has happened. And so March to the Majority tries to explain in a way that is totally relevant. I mean, every person who wants to figure out how to solve our country's problems, I think March to the Majority is like a cookbook. These things work. These are the things we did. This is what we learned. And we learned it very painfully. You know, we lost in 80, 82, 84, 86, 88, 90, and 92. So when we finally won in 94, and people said, boy, you were really lucky. No, we had cheerful persistence, and we kept trying. And I think a lot of this relates directly to where we are today. You have to have a Republican Party which can communicate. And I think it's very compelling that Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump, and our team in 1994 all had the same pattern of big ideas, constant repetition, winning the argument, being willing to mix it up with the news media and take the case. As Margaret Thatcher used to say, first you win the argument, then you win the vote. And I think that there are some lessons in March to the Majority that every Republican elected official and every would-be elected official ought to read and take to heart. These lessons grew out of a tremendous amount of hard work, and you know, because you were there and you were part of it. You saw how we crisscrossed the country day after day, recruiting candidates. We developed a tape program to train people and had some 55,000 people getting a tape every single month. People like John Boehner, who ultimately became speaker in his own right. The number of congressmen who were state legislators who got the tape and thought, hey, I could go to Congress. Governor Pataki, who even when he was governor, kept listening to the tapes. This is a book about how it happened, but it's also a book about how it can happen again.
I want to really put emphasis on something you're bringing up here, because you're right. We met in 1990 at a Holiday Inn in Decatur, Alabama. You were giving a big speech there. And we really technically had a very sketchy system for signaling back to the radio station our interview, but we managed to pull it off. It was called a MARTI system. You know, obviously now today we have so much more sophisticated equipment to do so very easily and cheaply. And even if you just FaceTime, for crying out loud, or you could do what we're doing here. But that was 1990. I went to Atlanta in 1992. So I got to watch the entire buildup to that night in November 1994. And what I noticed is when you created Renewing American Civilization, a series of tapes and ideas that you were laying out and the candidates you were recruiting, and they were listening to these tapes. My point is, it was all rooted in ideas. It was rooted in principles that you knew would make America a better place. I don't think conservatism is hard. Those principles that help bring you to a majority, to the march to the majority, those principles, if applied today, I would argue would absolutely work again. And I think that's what you're saying in this book, but a lot of people don't know them.
We'd gone through a huge process of trying to train people. We created a campaign academy. Joe Gaylord thinks he probably taught ultimately 90,000 people over the years. We created the tape program. We were doing special orders of hour after hour of teaching people. And I think it's important to recognize there's a continuity. I always tell people, if you haven't done it, go to YouTube and pull up Ronald Reagan's October 1964, A Time for Choosing speech, which he did on television for Goldwater. It's all there. I participated as a young congressman. I helped organize the first Capitol Steps event, which was in September of 1980 with Ronald Reagan. And we brought all the federal candidates in for the House and Senate. He had five big ideas. He described it as a contract with America. So we come along 14 years later. We basically recreate the same event. And if you look at the contract ideas in 1994, Reagan would have endorsed every single one of them. So there's nothing magic about this. But it's funny. People, I don't know if they get bored or if they don't slow down enough to understand. It takes constant repetition. I have a poster that I got when Calista and I made a movie about John Paul II called 9 Days to Change the World that says in Polish, for Poland to remain Poland, 2 + 2 must always equal 4. And it's a direct repudiation of Orwell's 1984, where the head of the government guy says, if we tell you it's 5, it's 5. If we tell you it's 3, it's 3. And they're saying that there are objective truths. Well, the same thing's true here. There are things that Reagan said, things I've said. You had a town hall meeting with Donald Trump, who was the third great articulator of these kind of ideas. And the fact is that we can go right back to the same page. We can run the same plays, and they work. Their great virtue is that they grow out of the American people. They're not theoretical, and they grow out of historic experience. They're not just abstract ideas. And I wrote March to the Majority in part to get across to people that there are straightforward, almost like a cookbook, there are straightforward ways to understand the American people, to communicate with the American people. And if you do it and you're persistent, you're going to be rewarded with enormous opportunities to reshape the government.
When you began this education effort, and it was an education effort, and you were able to get Republicans elected, go back to the time before that. I mean, 40 years in the wilderness was an awfully long period of time for a party to be in the minority. And I think you took that on. I'm not speaking ill of Bob Michaels, but it was sort of like a mentality that they accepted they would be a permanent minority. When you got into the House and you were putting this strategy, this plan, implementing this plan, putting together the strategy, when you got to the House, how did you get these other members now to take you seriously? Because I remember when you became Speaker, you said, I am a genuine revolutionary. And you were, and you are, and you remain.
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, I was extraordinarily fortunate because Guy Vanderjack, the congressman from Michigan, was the chairman of the campaign committee. And Guy thought that we ought to try to become a majority. And I went to see him before I was even sworn in. And I said, you know, we've been out of power for 24 years. Shouldn't we have some kind of a plan to become a majority? And he said, that's exactly right. He said, why don't we have a planning committee and you chair it? I hadn't even been sworn in yet. So as a freshman, I was empowered to work on how to become a majority. And I was very lucky because Bill Brock, the former senator from Tennessee and an old friend of mine, was the Republican National Committee chair. So after Margaret Thatcher got elected in 1979, her campaign team came over to brief people. And because I was chairing this committee, which we had invented, I was able to bring them into the House to talk about what they had done to win. And so I had this weird standing as a freshman. The older guys basically thought I was a nuisance. They didn't think it would ever happen. And at a practical level, they were right. I mean, this is 1980. We don't get there till 94. Finally, Dick Cheney resigned as whip to go to the Pentagon as Secretary of Defense in 1989. And Trent Lott had left to become the senator. And Jack Kemp had left to run for president and then ended up as Secretary of HUD. The vacuum was so great that I ran for whip. And you can see, even after a decade of work, I barely won. And I had both Bob Michael and George H.W. Bush opposed to me and doing everything they could to stop me, because it was already clear inside the conference that I was genuinely committed to big ideas and that I was, in a sense, a revolutionary. And of course, when George H.W. Bush broke his word, and instead of saying, read my lips, no new taxes, he said, read my lips, I'm going to raise taxes. I led the rebellion against him, and we actually won in the House conference. We beat the president and the minority leader. And that was the decisive turning point, because I think for most of our supporters back home, they suddenly said, gosh, these guys are serious. And when we designed the contract, the way we designed it, we said, we're going to vote on these in the first 100 days. We couldn't promise we'd pass them, but we could promise we'd vote on them. And we designed it so we could keep our word. And everybody signed up. I think a lot of them signed it because they figured there was no chance it was going to work. But why not, you know, at least humor Newt? People saw us for the first 100 days actually keeping our word. And every time we'd pass something, I'd go to the floor of the House with a copy of the contract from the TV Guide ad, and I would put a hole punch in it. And so one by one, we did every single thing we promised. And that created a real base. But I think what happened, two things. One, the disaster of Watergate, the collapse of Nixon after he'd won the largest majority in American history, or in modern history, 60%, the agony of watching their friends get wiped out, almost half the Republican conference was defeated. The Ford-Reagan primary fight, they were so tired that they didn't have any extra energy except to go through the motions. And we arrived as new people with new energy and new idealism and new optimism. That was part of it. The other was, truth is, I suspect on election day, not more than 10 Republicans thought we'd be a majority. That number may be high. Bob Walker and I used to think there might have been 5. And I remember, for example, two Saturdays before the election, I was at the Galleria in Houston, and I'm walking down the hall with Bill Archer, who's the ranking member on Ways and Means, and had been there since 1972. He's a great guy, great conservative. And I said to him, I hope that you and your chief of staff are planning how you're going to take over the Ways and Means Committee. And he literally stopped in mid-stride and looked at me and said, you're really serious. I said, Bill, you're going to be the chairman in 10 days. You had better get ready. And you could just see that it never occurred to him that it was real, that we were going to do it. But all the way through, this is why we talk about cheerful persistence so much. About a third of the Republicans were mad at me because I was making noise, and all of the Democrats were mad at me because I was trying to take away power. So you had to get up every morning and decide, even though that's true, I'm going to keep doing what we need to do to become a majority, and I'm going to be cheerful about it, no matter what happens that day. And that was the key to getting through it.
And they were not cheerful back. I will tell you as a side note, a number of years ago, I went back and I had to search. I think it was my brother-in-law that found them on eBay, old VHS tapes of Renewing American Civilization. I actually had to get the tapes. I just wanted to listen to them. And then I started to go through them. I want to sort of step back a hair and talk about the evolution, about how the ideas behind this education effort evolved into the contract. And I have a very specific memory of Election Day 1994, and you were there and you had your entourage, and I'm just some small little local talk show host, you know, running up to you and annoying you and saying, you really believe you're going to have the majority tonight? And you said, absolutely. How many seats do you think you'll pick up? And I think you actually nailed the number. My memory serves.
No, I thought we were off by one. We did not count on defeating Ross Jankowski in Chicago.
Okay, that was a big win.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
All of a sudden you're elected. Like Reagan once famously said, okay, won the election, now what do I do? So now you had to implement those ideas. You had made a big promise, but the ideas to the contract, to the election, to governance, that's really a whole process in and of itself.
Well, you know, that's why we called it March to the Majority, because it wasn't a jump, it wasn't a big leap, but it was day by day, gradually thinking it through. For example, the concept of opportunity society actually came from a speech I heard Reagan give in 79, and he'd picked up the idea of opportunity society from a speech given by the head of the NAACP. And then gradually that became, in the House, the Conservative Opportunity Society, and we created a budget, which you called the Budget of Hope and Opportunity. So all of these words gradually evolve. Reagan first proposed welfare reform, running for governor, in 1965. We passed welfare reform in 1996. So when I say we stood on his shoulders, I mean literally, and the March to the Majority tries to capture this sense. And I would say this to part of the reason why people should read this, particularly younger people who want to someday be involved in politics. This is a book which reminds you that it doesn't just spring out magically one morning. that you work at it and you work. It's like being a good professional golfer or a good pro football player or anything else. You work at it and you work at it and you work at it. And gradually, it all comes together. And I think that, as you're pointing out, you can take a set of ideas. For example, I was actually in a planning session. We were in Somalia. And my friend who was running this particular planning session said, you know, we're going to give them food. We're not going to teach them anything. They're not going to learn anything about democracy. They're not going to learn anything about the work ethic. And I said to him, well, we don't teach ourselves any of this. Why should we expect to be able to teach anybody else? And literally, as I left his place, I called Nancy Desmond, who was running our operation. I said, we're going to do a course on what it takes to renew American civilization. Because it hit me that the vacuum was that big. That's part of the reason I wrote March the Majority, because I think the vacuum of understanding how you represent the American people and how to be effective in representing them is as big today as it was in the 1980s. We need the Republican Party to reinvest in learning how to be a party based on the popular will and based on the American people, and not just a party based on raising money and hiring consultants.
It is amazing, and as I was reading the March to the Majority, I was stricken with the fact how things have so changed dramatically. I mean, the idea that the contract with America was a TV guide ad. I guarantee you there are people listening to this podcast right now that don't know what TV guide is, but how pivotal it was. It was in almost every American household. That was the way that people found out where their favorite TV shows were. Obviously, the pre-boom of cable everything. So all of a sudden, the ideas become the strategy, become the march to the majority, and now you're in power. And I remember these moments really well. You were not even sworn in as speaker. And the backlash by the media establishment, the backlash by the Democrats was almost instantaneous. Correct me if I'm wrong, but before you were sworn in as speaker in January of 95, in December of 94, you were the Gingrich that stole Christmas. Newsweek and Time magazine, when they were actually influential, had you on the front cover, I think, breaking Tiny Tim's crutches.
I didn't just steal Tiny Tim's crutch, I broke it.
That wasn't good enough to steal it.
The question they asked was so lovingly unbiased. It was, how mean will Gingrich's America be to the poor? Newsweek the following week had me as a Dr. Seuss figure, and I was the Grinch that stole Christmas. The Reagan model of communicating, and which is also the Gingrich and Trump model, is what the average reader got out of that was, oh, he's for welfare reform. And so all of the liberal efforts to attack me just backfired. By the time we got done with the debate in 96, 92% of the country favored welfare reform, including 88% of the people on welfare. They picked probably our strongest single issue to attack us on. And all that did was remind the average hardworking American, oh, yeah, I'm with Gingrich. Now, I mean, I think they managed to batter me as a person pretty well, but they didn't manage to batter the ideas at all. Part of March the Majority is not just how do you win power, but then how do you use power? And that's how we got to four consecutive balanced budgets, which I think if George W. Bush had understood what we were doing, he would have had a much more effective and a much more successful administration.
It's interesting because if you go back, you did a couple of things. Let me start with you followed through on your promise, and your promise was the contract with America and that you would vote on them in the first 100 days. And I think promises made have to be promises kept by politicians. I think that is probably the single most disappointing thing I hear from conservatives is Republicans say one thing on the campaign trail and they don't follow through. You followed through, which was number one. But Clinton tried to govern from the hard left in the first 2 years of his presidency, and that was when Hillary Care was being debated. It went over like a dead balloon, and that resulted in part to your rise to power. And to Bill Clinton's credit, politically speaking, he's very savvy. I think you would agree with that. He got into a series of negotiations with you that resulted in, you're right, him saying the era of big government is over and the end of welfare as we know it. Those are not Democratic Party ideas, but he was a Southern governor from Arkansas, maybe a little more conservative naturally than he had portrayed himself in the general campaign. But it was that moment, and I remember when you guys had your big debate together, it was that moment to me that showed that, wow, this is going to happen. These are going to be real changes. Now, I want everybody to understand and really, really highlight this. We're now $31 trillion in debt as a nation today, this year, 2023. And you were the last speaker, the only one in my lifetime, to balance a budget four consecutive years. You had a partner in that. Talk a little bit about that dynamic, that relationship, and the opening of his overreach towards this area of compromise and basically submission, as far as I'm concerned.
Part of what I tried to communicate in March to the majority is that it is a process. It's a series of steps. It's not a giant leap. You don't wake up one morning and just bam, you get there. But part of what happened was he'd been the youngest governor in the country in 1978. He lost in 1980, and it totally shattered him. And he went around for 2 years moping, and then he finally won re-election. But he was very aware that he could lose. And so in June of 1995, they apparently had this huge meeting at the White House, and Clinton listened to all of his liberal friends tell him, you know, you've got to stand up to Gingrich, you've got to fight for the true faith. And when they got done, he said to him, if I do what you want me to do, I will be defeated in 1996. But if I find ways to work with Gingrich, I'll probably get reelected. And I'm not going to sit here and commit myself to being defeated. And that was the turning point. And so he and I would meet regularly. We spent 35 days together negotiating a balanced budget. And we would talk. We would both sit and just chat, driving our staffs crazy. At times, he would try to concede things. At one point, I remember Leon Panetta was his chief of staff, and Panetta jumped up physically and said, you can't do that. We lost control of the House having voted for that. You're betraying all the people who voted for that in 94. And Clinton stared at him. I'd never quite seen a president dressed down by his own staff. And he finally turned to me and said, well, I guess that's one I can't give away. And then we found something else. But it was that kind of human dynamic. And I think he suddenly got intrigued with the idea that he could be the president who balanced the budget for real. Comparing to the mess we're in right now, people don't remember, but Alan Greenspan was chairman of the Federal Reserve, and Greenspan gave a speech, I think it was in 99, where he said they had now projected that we would pay off the national debt by 2009, and they had a working group at the Federal Reserve trying to figure out how would you manage the money supply if you had no debt? Because they'd never thought about it. Last time we were told out of debt was 1835.
Especially coming out of the Carter years into the Reagan years, right? There were a couple of tough years there.
That's right. When you look at how the trajectory we were on when I left office, and then you look at how it all got squandered, hopefully we're going to get back on that trajectory. And part of the purpose of March the Majority is to say to, for example, budget committee members or incumbent congressmen or candidates, look, this can be done. We have done it. It's not a theory. It's a fact. And here are the things you can do to get this done. And I think that makes it a really, really important moment in time.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Can you give us a little more insight? You talked about, 35 straight days meeting with Bill Clinton. How much time was that alone time? I mean, I know when staffs get together, it takes on a very different dynamic. How well did you get to know him? Were you guys on the phone late at night and talking into the wee hours of the morning?
We would talk by phone. Occasionally, he would ask me to come down and we'd break out some bourbon and just the two of us and just sit and talk for a while. I mean, it wasn't all that common, but 4 or 5 times. He also knew that on foreign policy, I would protect him. At one point, he wanted to attack some of Saddam Hussein's facilities. And we talked it through. We did it together. And I think that had a real impact on him. He knew that while I was prepared to be a very tough partisan, I was also prepared to be very fair. And I described this in March the Majority. I used a negotiating model that was a box. One side of the box was what you have to have. One side of the box was what I have to have. One side of the box is what you can't give up. And one side of the box is what I can't give up. Now, in the middle of those 4 lines, there's a deal. And I practiced something I'd learned from the U.S. Army, which was listen, learn, help, and lead. And I practiced the listen, learn part a lot. And so the star would always be, what is it you could never do? If it turned out to be something I absolutely had to have, then we had to fight. But if what he could never do wasn't central to what we were doing, I could say, all right, I can give that up, but here's what I have to have. And we would negotiate back and forth. And I think people underestimate, you have to get together long enough to understand each other and have some sense of trust. Because you're asking people to take risks. You're saying to the President of the United States, this is going to make your base angry. I mean, when he agreed to sign welfare reform, even when he was signing it, and even when 92% of the country wanted it, 1/2 of the Democrats voted no. Now, just think about that. Because they just couldn't do it. And I think that that's really important to understand that a number of these things, he signed the largest capital gains tax cut in history. Well, if you're a left-wing Democrat, this is why, by the way, the left never fully liked Hillary. It wasn't the scandals. It was that when it mattered, Bill Clinton sold them out. There was a grudge there that is pretty astonishing.
In many ways, you're telling me about a Bill Clinton that I don't think most people know. You also, though, had taken a lot of heat from within your caucus. And it was interesting because this part I found painful to watch because you had led them to this point and then you had some of your top lieutenants turn on you. That had to be disappointing.
Well, it was. I mean, it's partly because I was probably too aggressive. Sometimes when you lead a revolution, you get to going too fast and your followers can't keep up. And then you're frankly not a good leader. And I would say that in some ways, I was so determined to push on every front. When we got elected that night that you were with us in 1994, I concluded that we were going to take on the entire national establishment, in some ways very similar to Trump in 2016 and 17. And I concluded that I would last 4 years, but that I probably couldn't last against the entire weight of the establishment. I thought I had a window to really dramatically change things. And so I actually spent part of November and December 1994, after we won, studying Wellington, because Wellington's campaign in the peninsula, he's always outnumbered and he's always having to find ways to win despite being outnumbered, because I assumed we'd always be outnumbered. We'd have the weight of the national media, we'd have the unions, we would have the Democratic Party, we'd have most of the bureaucracy. I mean, all of these things coming crashing down on us, and we had to find a way to create an alliance with the American people. And I always thought that the 96 election would be more difficult than 94 because we hadn't won re-election in 68 years, not since 1928. So everything we did was designed to both achieve our goals, which were, by the standard of that time, revolutionary. I mean, balancing the budget for 4 years was revolutionary. Replacing welfare with work was revolutionary.
This is a sidebar. I can't help myself. I'm a talk show host. Did he ever reach out to you during that Lewinsky time?
We talked occasionally, and he understood sort of where things were at. The truth is, the day the House was voting to impeach him, he called me to talk about Saddam Hussein. Remarkable ability to compartmentalize. He knew that he had caused his own trouble, and he knew he had to endure it. And of course, he fought ferociously to survive and succeeded. In honesty, I think I had worn my troops out. I think 4 years of Gingrich was about half a year more than they were capable of enduring. And I wasn't smart enough to modulate and back off.
I'm not sure. I mean, I remember you wrote Lessons Learned the Hard Way not long after that. And I thought maybe you were a little hard on yourself at that time because the accomplishments speak for themselves. We haven't balanced the budget since the four that you balanced. And what an amazing book. I just want to say to your listeners, look, this book, if you care about the future, if you understand the need for guiding principles and an agenda that will resonate and also help save the country, March to the Majority by Newt Gingrich is the roadmap. It was the roadmap for you, but it's also the roadmap moving forward. You know, you mentioned a number of times that, well, Ronald Reagan gave this speech and I picked up this from his speech. That shows how timeless these principles are. I'm going to bet sometime in history, people are going to look at this book and they're going to learn from Newt Gingrich and they're going to look at historically at your speakership and the time that you led and say, that's the way to do it. If we go back to that, we'll be serving the American people. But I know we have to wrap up. It's called March to the Majority. It's now in bookstores all across the country. It's on Amazon.com, Hannity.com. Newt's going to put up on his website a way to get autographed copies of the book. Mr. Speaker, first of all, it's an honor for me to join you on your podcast. And of course, you're on my radio and TV show about the book. It's a must read for anybody that cares about how to really get America back on track today.
One of the great pleasures of these years has been having you as a personal friend. It really means a lot to me, and I watch with great admiration how hard you work and how passionately you love this country. And so it was a great honor that you would be willing to chat with me about March to the Majority.
No, this honor is all mine. I mean, think about this, 1990, and you know, here we are 30 some odd years later, and you've always kind of been the big brother that I always needed with three older sisters and the one I wanted. I value your friendship way more than you'll ever know. I think this is one of the most important books people can read right now before the 2024 election. I'm asking everybody, go out, get your copy, bookstores around the country, Amazon.com, Hannity.com, Newt Gingrich's website. And, you know, I got to thank you, Mr. Speaker. March to the Majority, I believe it's on NewtsWorld.com. And Newt's World is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Garnsey Sloan. Our researcher is Rachel Peterson. Artwork for the show created by Steve Penley, who's phenomenal. Love him. Special thanks to all the team at Gingrich 360. And if you're enjoying Newt's World, I hope you go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. And right now, listeners of Newt's World can sign up for Newt's 3 free weekly columns. That's at gingrich360.com/newsletter, gingrich360.com/newsletter. Mr. Speaker, it's been my honor. It always is. Congratulations. And this March to the Majority is the answer. The answers are here.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit, April 25th to 27th with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Lowe's knows home improvement. Lowe's, official sponsor for the 2024 NFL Draft.